anxiety all day long. Can you relate?
Most people with some form of disordered anxiety are anxious all day long.
And I find that when people have anxiety all day long, it's because they find it difficult to not check in on it, compulsively check to see if it's there. Has it gone yet?
Simmering or close to boiling over or just wound up, tense, tight, like I'm about to explode.
It would start off and present itself as morning dread. And in the middle of the day, it would be like a simmering unease. And in the evening, it would feel like a tired guilt. It would morph and change. It will become a thing that you're not solving this.
Mm-hmm.
Try harder.
Well, I have to try and fix this. No, you don't. What happens if you don't fix it? What else can you do instead of fixing it?
Welcome to Disordered. This is episode 13, unlucky for some, particularly if you've got anxiety that lasts all day long. And that is the title of today's episode. My name is Joshua Fletcher, also known as Anxiety Josh on social media, and I'm a psychotherapist who specializes in anxiety, and I'm based in Manchester in the UK.
And I am Drew Linsalata. I am coming to you from New York, Long Island, to be specific. I am a graduate student in clinical mental health counseling and a therapist in training, and you will find me as The Anxious Truth on social media. I am the lucky co-host of Disordered. Welcome, everybody. Lucky 13.
Yeah. Well, before we start, I wanted to share my own Did It Anyway.
Let's do it.
You know, make it about me.
Why 100%.
Not? Everyone else on. Yeah, it does. Anyway. I did it anyway. I was best man. My friend's wedding over the weekend, and I was petrified about my speech, quite a spicy speech as well, and I had this anticipatory anxiety all day, and I felt sick. I was dissociating at the derealization, the scary what ifs, you know, the kind of, oh yeah, just the catastrophes, you know, am I going to pass out, I'm going to throw up on the kid in front of me during the speech, am I going to offend people? It got to it, and I was petrified, shaking, but I did it, and I loved it, you know, and I did it anyway, and you know what, it went down really well, so I was absolutely buzzing. That's why I did it anyway.
I've seen some of the video. You killed it, man.
Thank you very much.
You get some studio audience. Come on, studio audience.
Oh yeah, there we go, studio audience. Thanks. We've been joined by a studio audience today. Sit down, Matthew McConaughey. You know, it's about us, not you.
Yes, Matthew McConaughey is here to cheer for Josh. Let me follow up on your Did It Anyway. What did you do when you were dissociated and like having all that anticipatory anxiety? What did you do with it?
Not much. Just sat there, waited. I realized that I'm anxious because I care. You know, it's just adrenaline, cortisol. Did a few things just to let the adrenaline go, so, you know, squeeze my legs and hands and stuff like that. Not to get rid of anxiety. I know why I was anxious, you know, but sometimes, you know, physically when you're going to do something performative like that, it's okay to stretch your muscles and do things like that. And that's what I did. My anxiety wanted me to run out of the room, avoid, get someone else to read it, you know, keep running to the toilet. I was like, nah, I was like, I'll get on with it.
Yeah.
I will admit though, I did have a cheeky whiskey beforehand, you know, just to do.
But it was cheeky though, so it was okay.
It's cheeky whiskey, yeah. It wasn't a compulsive whiskey. It was just like, oh, go on, best man. Someone offered it me. I was like, go on then. You know,
I think that's one of those situations where it's normal to be nervous. It's a big day and a big event, so.
Yeah, of course, everyone, if you're not worried about doing a speech or whatever, public speaking and stuff like that, then, you know, that's normal. But anyway, that was my Did It Anyway, just to show that, you know, anxiety is an old part of life, and even the hosts of this podcast will have to go through these challenges as well.
Yeah.
Anxiety all day long. Can you relate?
Yes. And here's one of the myths I want to dispel right out of the gate. So we're going to get controversial. We're going to blow up a myth right away. People that are anxious all day long but don't have panic attacks, which is what we kind of wanted to talk about today, are convinced sometimes that people who have things like panic disorder panic and then have no anxiety until they panic again. Most people with some form of disordered anxiety are anxious all day long. It's kind of an almost universal experience. So if you're anxious all day long, that's not a special thing. Most of us felt anxious. I was anxious all day long, all day. So it was, I was either panicking or worried about panicking. So yeah, it was good times from morning to night.
In the comments section on my Instagram, I often hear, but what about anxiety that lasts all day long? particularly when you hear, you know, these kind of common phrases like "this too shall pass," mm-hmm. "my anxiety will pass," "panic attacks always pass." The comments I get are, "Yeah, but what if I get anxiety from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep?" Mm-hmm. And this episode's for you,
because
I've been there. I've had anxiety, perceivably had anxiety all day. You know, it wavers and fluctuates, but I know what it's like. It's become a thing all day. It feels like something that's there all day. This is for you, both from how we got out of it to sharing some experiences of actually being in it.
Yeah, I think it's a good place to start, is to recognize that it's not a unique experience. It's not a special kind of anxiety. Like, again, most people, if you're sort of in the community, air quotes community, around the work that Josh and I do, most of the people you see around you are anxious most of the day. So,
yeah. It's not like an itch,
right?
You know, like a lot of disordered anxiety, whether it's OCD, whether it's kind of generalized anxiety, panic attacks, whatever, it's to do with a phobia or misinterpretation of the threat response. And so when you are kind of scared of something, and if you've not heard, listen to the episode about the threat response, where I say the word amygdala a lot.
Amygdala. There it is.
Chime in. Come on.
I got to get on the ball with 13. These things. I swear to goodness.
I'm going to get a sound thing. I'm going to play these things. I'm going to be on it.
I'm going to be demoted from sound guy. This is where
my compulsions will kick in. Because I'll be like just pressing them and ruining the integrity of the
podcast. Wait a minute.
Amygdala.
There you go. Nice and
there
clear.
There we go. Yeah. Don't edit your mistakes out. Keep them in.
Oh, no. They'll be here for all this, the whole world to see.
If you're scared of something, and what we spoke about in the threat response episode, is that you'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
And when you keep an eye on it, what's that going to do, Drew?
Yeah, it's going to perpetuate it. It's like throwing gas on the fire all day long.
Yeah. And I find that when people have anxiety all day long, disordered anxiety in particular, it's because they find it difficult to not check in on it, compulsively check to see if it's there. Has it gone yet? You know, what's that? Disclaimer, this is really important. Anxiety is your threat response. And some people may actually be having legitimate anxiety in an environment that is legitimately triggering your threat response.
Sure.
I.e., you might live with someone who isn't very nice. Mm-hmm. Someone might be abusive. You might live in a family that aren't very pleasant. You might be on eggshells around certain people. That is nothing to do. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
That's your brain literally telling you there's a threat. There's no exposures for that. If you're in danger or you're subjected to nastiness or anything like that, you know, get out when you can. Well, yeah. That's just my disclaimer anyway. That has come up in the past, so if that's you. But in general, for people that are just frustrated at having anxiety that seems to be there, that simmering one all day long, or panicked or not, the roller coaster of panic, I call it the loop of peak anxiety. This kind of, that thrives on the more we kind of look at it, check it, and get annoyed by it.
Yeah, trying to figure it out. I would add to your disclaimer also, if you're dealing with a medical issue or a loved one is, or there's a threat to someone's life, or you're even moving house or changing jobs, or like sometimes it's normal to just be anxious all the time. And I think one of the differences is people who are going through those kind of things who don't have the problems we're addressing understand that I'm a mess right now because my partner is having chemotherapy and it's super stressful and they get anxious and they know why. But people in our audience or our community, again, to use the word, will not only be nervous about that and anxious about what's going on around them, but then they'll be anxious about the fact that they're anxious. And that's the part we care about. So yeah, it's the part where you try to start to figure it out and figure it out and figure it out. And you can't, and that makes it tougher.
Yeah. I remember when I had anxiety all day, when I first became unwell, because I was unwell, you know, I didn't understand what was happening and I wasn't eating and stuff like that. Not unwell in the sense that like, oh, there's something physically wrong with me, but mentally unwell in the sense that I'm in thought patterns that weren't helping and affecting me. I would just kind of struggle to believe that what was happening to me wasn't disastrous. This feeling of unease must have meant something. Mm-hmm. This feeling of doom must mean there's something to do it. And I didn't really, I wasn't educated on what was happening to me. I barely really used the word anxiety, but I had this feeling all day long, ever since that one initial stressful event, well, accumulation of stressful events, culmination. And threat response, you know, goes bananas, and it made me feel really frightened. And then looking back, me feeling frightened and not wanting to feel frightened again, having all these thoughts, my behavior was keeping that threat response all day.
Yeah.
You know, whilst also living a very stressful life. So that was keeping my threat response on all day as well. I was going through some difficult times. I just remember doing that and just feeling like that was it, one of my compulsions. And I don't blame myself for doing this, because you take in like popular media, you take in all these things. I did this thing called searching for the miracle thought. Did you ever do that?
No, but I've heard you say that.
Oh, some people really resonate, like my followers on my page. It's like, if I explore the echelons of my mind, maybe go through my childhood, maybe go through, try to work it out, basically. When I try to find the miracle thought that takes it all away through this kind of intellectualized compulsive rumination,
yeah,
it will go away. And all I was doing was just, like you said, putting fuel on the fire, teaching my brain that something was wrong. There was something I used to do all the time when I had anxiety all day long. It was like, if I find the miracle thought, it can all go away.
It's all good.
It's interesting. Yeah, was a big one for me.
And that's how you tried to combat your all-day-long anxiety. But it's, you know, you can very clearly now, in retrospect, in some of the conversations we've had on the air and privately, like, there were particular events that led up to this, sort of the wheels falling off on you. Isn't it amazing that all the searching for the miracle thought missed that? Like, yeah. You would think that at some point, that's the difference between the disordered and the non-disordered person. The, you know, one person says, oh, well, look at all I've been through in the last year. It's horrible. And yeah, I'm in really bad shape right now. Whereas the disordered person misses that. And just the state itself becomes the driver of the state. And then you start to look for all kinds of stuff instead of the thing that may have been right in front of you.
Yeah, like Occam's razor, you know, the simplest
right
explanation is usually the right one. And looking back, yeah, I mean, as well of the jug analogy, which is my stress jug just filled up and up and up and up and up. Until one day my threat response did not understand the modern subjective stress and was like, have a week's worth of adrenaline in about 10 minutes. Bang, whoa, that's fear, that's terror, that's horrible.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that kind of drove that. Now, that started for me. It can be different for everyone.
Sure.
People with GAD usually have simmering anxiety all day.
Yep.
It's annoying. It's a problem. People will listen to what ifs all day and treat them as if they could be real in some way and give them that importance. What does it feel like to have anxiety all day long? Because we explain like panic attacks, stuff like that. But what does it feel like to have anxiety all day long?
For me, when I was in that anxious state all day long, or even now, like if I'm under the gun and I have a particularly anxious day, which can happen to me sometimes, it just feels like, sometimes it's really hard to put these things in words, isn't it? It feels simmering or close to boiling over or just like wound up, tense, tight, like I'm about to explode, like you might lose control. There's just all of those things. I could still, even when I experience anxiety now, that's kind of what it's going to feel like if I have an anxious day. It's just a really keyed up, like, I can't even put it into words. I don't know. Can you?
Yeah, I did. I funnily enough, came out of a rumination and reflection. Sure. That's just more reflection other than rumination. It's for me, it was like an ever morphing kind of presentation. So it would start with morning doom. I mean, last episode we spoke about morning anxiety, nighttime anxiety, but it would start off and present itself as morning dread. Then in the middle of the day, it would be like a simmering unease. And then maybe some afternoons I might have a spike of terror and panic. And then the evening it would feel like a tired guilt. And along with that, and in one of the earlier episodes, we separate anxiety into thoughts, feelings, and sensations. Mm. It is like a pick and mix of each. And each time the anxiety wanted to present itself, you know, you put your hand in the bag and you come out with a different kind of arrangement.
Yeah.
So sometimes I could have, a headache and a tight chest, and I'm obsessed with my breathing. Sometimes I feel this feeling in the pit of my stomach. It would morph and change, and then I'd actually misinterpret the morphing and changing as something different. Also, this is something new. It's basically anxiety giving me more stuff to make sure that it had my attention.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I was just going to respond with. I think the common thread would be that in every case, whatever it happens to be, it's when that feeling, that state of being mentally, emotionally, physically became the most important thing in the room. Like, that's what being anxious all day long feels like to me, was just that I feel things that I don't like. They're uncomfortable. They're uneasy. They're, it feels on edge. It feels like I'm going to explode. And it is the most important thing in the room all the time. I'm always aware of it. And I'm always looking at it, and I'm always judging if it's there. That was tough. It was the constantly attaching myself to it that made it even harder, for sure.
And bear in mind, like, that's exactly what the brain, your brain's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, you're not crazy.
No.
Your brain isn't going, it feels incongruous, because it is. Like, when the disordered nature of this type of anxiety is that actually your brain's doing a very healthy, normal thing. It's got confused and thinks that, well, the threat here is in how you feel in itself. Or if the threat isn't here, then maybe it's in one of these scary what if thoughts that I'm going to suggest to you.
Yeah.
But its job is to kind of keep your attention on it. Because like we said, back to the threat response episode, it's the most powerful, it's what makes us the most powerful predator in the world. Like, if I've got a mechanism in my brain that makes me doubt and focus on potential threat, I can outmaneuver predators.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, the predator is the anxiety itself a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And so it's doing its job. You're not broken, but we need to teach it, like, come on, man. Like, there's got to be a lot of kind of, you said something brilliant in the last episode. Was it the calm repetition of?
Oh, the continued return to disengaging with it. Like,
over time. But yeah, I mean, your anxiety isn't special. And kind of look back, and every client I have in here comes in to say that, it's like, but what are you doing with your behaviors? Where's your focus?
Mm-hmm.
And often you start to see these kind of maintaining behaviors. I'm not blaming anyone for that. I'm just saying, from someone who's experienced it, looking back, I'm like, I was kind of keeping the cycle going with what I was doing.
Yeah. And I think it also makes you vulnerable when you're in that, I'm just anxious all day long. When something comes along that would legitimately bother you, rile you up, make you anxious or whatever, then again, you'll gloss over what happened and just go right to the feeling it triggered. So for people who will say that they're just simmering and anxious, or I have GAD, which we should talk about that, by the way, like, just because you feel anxious all day doesn't automatically mean that you have generalized anxiety disorder, but whatever, we can talk about that, you know? And so therefore anything that triggers them in their life instantly becomes about the fact that they were triggered, not the thing itself, which is interesting. And then some of the times when you hear people tell stories where it's just from an outside perspective looking in, you would say, well, why are you wondering why you're anxious all the time? One of the great quotes I ever heard from somebody was a woman who said, when we're going to go to the cinema, she's British, she says, I'm worried about where we're going to park 3 days before we leave the house. And I'm like, now remind me again why you're always in overdrive thinking and anxious about everything. And she was like, oh my God. It was like that moment of like, I do that. So every little triggering thing became a huge deal because it made her feel. And she just declared that, like, so important that she was feeling anxious.
Was it thought, action, fusion, isn't it? I think that's what it's called. Where you, when you put a thought and then you commit action to it. So I have a thought.
Yeah, and I'm going to
triggers my threat response, and then I'm going to act in response to it.
Yeah, I'm going to treat it like it's real or important, and boom, instantly act in response to that.
And that's huge for people who complain of having anxiety all day long, is that sometimes we treat each thought like it needs to immediate action, because that's what the threat response wants you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is kind of like ignoring it and disengaging with it. I know it sounds really boring, and I wish I could pull out a magic wand or tell you this CBD oil will do this and whatnot, or this magic potion or this ashwagandha plant can take it all away. No, actually, it's you. You know, we discussed getting the credit. It's doing the tricky stuff. It's like, actually, oh, I've got to really practice and exercise my attention muscle here and my focus.
Yeah, and I think for people who maybe they're in the, what do you call it, when it's looping all day long, and you know, you panic and then not, and then panic again. And
the loop of peaking anxiety, I call it.
I like it. That's a t-shirt right there. But I think for sure, for those people, it's, well, I'm in between the peaks. I'm going to have to let go of the protection against the next peak. That feels wrong. Like, okay, so I'm not going to protect myself. For people who maybe don't have that, it's just that constant simmer. Often it's like, well, you're going to have to be okay with the fact that you can't solve this. Stop asking questions about it and stop trying to fix it, because these aren't even questions that need to be asked. And that feels very wrong, irresponsible, reckless, against their nature. So those are uncomfortable things to do and not natural things to do, but that would be the way you start to do this. Well, I have to try and fix this. No, you don't. What happens if you don't fix it? What else can you do instead of fixing it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like a human drive to fix, isn't it? Like, if there's a puzzle 100%. Or a problem, we want that solution. And that, again, is nothing wrong with you. That's just your human nature. But when you apply the urge to fix something to something that doesn't need to be fixed, they need to be left alone, you end up in cycles. And that's what most people with anxiety all day long have.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Another disclaimer is like, sometimes if you've got PTSD, you could be having kind of PTSD triggers.
Sure.
That could lead to anxiety all day long. Now, before you jump in and be like, oh my God, what if I've got PTSD? I need to find the root cause of that. It's pretty obvious, or it's pretty uncovered pretty quickly in therapy. Some examples, you know, maybe you move back to a house that, you know, you grew up in and some bad things happened there. Maybe you live with someone who is not very nice. Maybe even just like the sound of traffic outside is triggering something for you.
Yeah.
You know, PTSD, you know, can put you in states of hypervigilance and alert. And make sure you work with kind of a professional there to help you, guide you through PTSD. Yeah, don't get me wrong, you know, anxiety, panic attacks, they're traumatic. But PTSD, again, is usually defined by things like flashbacks, intense kind of acute, intense reactions where you're almost convinced that you feel like you're back in that situation again. It differs from panic in the sense that, you know, a very compassionate, supportive approach to those exposures and therapy itself is highly recommended. That's a disclosure. Yeah. I don't want to let people, these are people that can have anxiety all day long, but the vast majority of people who have anxiety all day long, and the odds on, are people who are just, yeah, just, I've noticed the anxiety's there and I hate it and it's always there and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I always get a kick out of, you know, because so much of the, especially in the beginning, a lot of my work was based on that fear thing. I know you can relate to that. And they would tell me all the time, but I'm not afraid of it. Okay, well, you might not necessarily be afraid of it, but you sure are spending a whole lot of time trying to fix it and solve it. So that might not necessarily be fear, but it's still trying to get rid of it, a thing that you don't understand why it's even there. So it's a little bit tough. And I think there are also underlying, what are the words I'm going to use? I use the word drivers, but it's always interesting to talk to those anxious all day people and find those patterns of perfectionism and people pleasing and problem solving and over planning and overthinking. And, you know, well, yeah, you're trying to bring this incredible problem solving thing that we have between our ears, which we're thankful that we have. And you're trying to bring it to bear in places that it was never designed to be all the time. And that goes off the rails, puts you in a bad place. So
yeah.
Not everything is a problem that can be solved, or especially by thinking.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Also, it's important to bring attention to kind of the role of irritation and self-criticism. What kind of role does that have for people that have anxiety all day long?
Yeah, I mean, I hear it most in the whole, like, it's a failure because I can't figure this out. And then I get I'm a little bit even more anxious because I can't figure it out and I think I should be able to, and it means that something is really wrong. Either there's something so deeply wrong that I can't find and it's this is going to be a problem, or I should be able to figure this out.
Shut up, Craig.
Right. I'm a thinker. I should be able to figure this out, and I can't, so therefore I'm doing it wrong, and I got to try even harder to figure it out. It's a vicious cycle in this guy.
It's Craig, the critic.
He's going to feel it every time.
Such a douchebag, isn't he?
He is, totally.
And he lives in all of us.
Yeah.
But yeah, it will become a thing that you're not solving this.
Mm-hmm.
Try harder.
Yeah, right. My thinking isn't working, so I better think harder.
Oh, and that is going to have the opposite effect of what you want.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
And lots of people get pulled into the, and I'm going to take another swipe at the wellness sphere again, of which we are part of, but like kind of, maybe I need to do more stuff on me, you know, and when you get all this perfectionist stuff, you know, like I need to do this, maybe I need to do that. And we start to apply meticulous perfectionism and wellness perfectionism almost compulsively, because we feel like we're not, you know, doing things well enough. So, you know, you go out in the morning and stare at the sun for a certain amount of time because someone told me that, you know, that's what's the optimum time. That self-optimizing stuff.
Sure.
And yet, lo and behold, 2 years later, you're still anxious all day, and you've tried and you've done, to be fair, you've probably done brilliantly. You've done all the work. You've put in such hard work to help yourself, but ultimately, and this is where I love saying the golden rules, would non-anxious you be doing that? And anxious rule number two is what I'm doing teaching the amygdala that this feeling is okay? No. So yeah. If you're not doing the anxious rules, don't expect that feeling to go away.
Especially in an environment where we are consistently surrounded by messages about how we can hack our moods and hack our emotions and engineer positive experiences and choosing happiness. So like being in an anxious state all day in that environment is kind of looked at as failure. You're not vibrating correctly. You're not choosing happiness. Like you're surrounded by toxicity and negativity. That's what's doing it. And it leads to a lot of really serious problem solving behavior that often goes nowhere.
I mean, you know, yeah, it does. You're right. Yeah. You're right. And we say this kindly, like if you see all that stuff, don't compare yourself to that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you're all right. If you're being anxious all day long, you are living each day with that threat response on. And that is exhausting. So go easy on yourself. Like, that's hard. I remember having anxiety all day. I was bloody exhausted. And then the guilt on top of it, you should be doing this. You're shying away from your caring responsibilities. There's things you should be doing and you can't, you know, and stuff like that. People have it worse than you. It's like, nah, man, like living all day with that threat response is tricky. But what we're saying, it's okay to kind of leave it alone. It's all right. Nothing bad will happen if you kind of detach from that rumination.
That's a big one. Nothing bad will happen if you detach from it and just leave it unsolved. It's okay. Like, you'll still come through it on the other end.
Particularly for the OCD heads as well that use rumination as a compulsion. It feels so, like instinctual, like so right to do it and irresponsible for not doing it. But it's okay. Just leave it alone.
Yeah, I like to use the word. I throw the word reckless in there all the time. Like not doing those things feels reckless to a certain extent in many cases.
Yeah. Well,
that is irresponsible, man. How could I stop doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, also you look at some of the things and yeah, you know, so we take a swipe at wellness. But like you said, we're in it. You know, if you are anxious all day because your partner is not nice to you, because you are in a workplace environment where you're being berated and abused and mistreated, then like, yeah, in that case, things like negativity and toxicity actually do matter and you do want to address those things. If you can't identify that stuff, though, and you just think it must be one of those words because I hear them all the time, even though I can't find the negativity and the toxicity, I better look for it. That's where there's a bit of a red flag sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, particularly I feel anxious for no reason and I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
If you're a person that kind of thinks that, then this is because, you know, we need to leave it alone.
Yeah, kind of.
You know, there's nothing to solve.
Right.
You know, Scooby and the gang can do one. It's nothing here. Nothing new.
Scooby and the gang. I would have got away with it if it wasn't for you pesky kids.
Yeah. And you remove the mask, and all you find is just yourself.
Yeah, you. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, that was deep, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's going in the intro.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to write that down. What time is it? 29 minutes.
Making a Scooby-Doo reference.
Scooby-Doo reference.
And there's some deep metaphor.
When you take off the mask, it's just you underneath.
Yeah, it's just you. It's just that's it. That's it. You're not evil. You're not the baddie.
Yep.
Just you. Nothing to solve. I love talking about that. And I want to... Oh, no. Have we got any questions first?
We do have a question that I think kind of plays right into this. So this was, again, if you go to disorder.fm, you can use the voicemail thing to record voicemail. We won't spread it to the world. Only we will listen to it, unless you want us to play it on the air and then tell us.
Yeah.
Or you can use to send us a message, to send us questions. We literally read them. We've seen every question that comes in. So don't be shy.
Yeah. We will read them. Whatever you want to say. That sounds great. So, we've got a few messages, people being kind, you know. Not any hate mail yet, but the podcast is still young.
That's true. I'm a little disappointed we've got no hate mail yet. But so ask questions or share did it anyways or whatever you want to do. Like, we're here. We'll listen. We'll hear it. So this person sent in, again, no names because he didn't say that we could use his name. But this person is asking about metacognitive beliefs. I can geek out about this stuff forever. So once you figure out your metacognitive beliefs, which is essentially your thinking style or your thoughts about thoughts, thinking about thinking. Once you figure out your metacognitive beliefs, how do you change them? Do you need to change them? For example, let's say that I believe that rumination, this is perfect for this topic today, rumination helps me find answers and that rumination helps me understand. But, and here's where he defends his rumination, I love this part of the question, but there is some truth to those beliefs. So he's going to defend rumination, but he also wants to stop it. For example, thinking is my go-to to solve problems. It rewards me in my career. He's in a technical career. So thinking is productive in my career, but when it is applied to my anxiety, it is very detrimental and very difficult to control. So I have a love-hate relationship with thinking. This is a great question. So how should someone approach metacognitive beliefs that are partially helpful and also hurtful at the same time?
That's a good question. For me, there's a huge difference. It doesn't feel like there's a difference, but there is metacognitively between reflection and rumination. So yeah, thinking is great. Problem solving is great, but you've got to realize that problem solving when external with a set criteria and work with an aim,
sure,
where you know rationally, you know, their solution could be happier or a best solution can be here, then yeah, of course, use that as part of your wonderful brain and well done for doing that in your job. But rumination is when there is no answer. You're going round and round in circles, and just because it feels like there's an answer, there isn't. You know, it feels like a hamster wheel, you know, and it does require distinguishing between them both. And actually, they are quite clear. You know, someone's ruminating when, you know, if you hypothetically wrote all your thoughts down for an hour at work, they'd have some kind of structure and they go places and they maybe not be followed through with, but it's all part of the rationalization process where there's a general trajectory that you're going with your thoughts. Mm-hmm. You know, rumination is you just go in nowhere. Your anxious behaviors are more, you know, and suddenly actually, you know, it's rumination because the same topic is getting more and more attention and you're making no progress.
Yeah, I think another great, everything you said, I think I'm with 100%. And for this person, I think he's confused. Like, well, when am I supposed to go with my belief in my thinking and not? Well, one of the things that is sort of in the theory that underlies metacognitive therapy is that you have this crazy swinging back and forth relationship with those metacognitive beliefs, which is, I really need to do this because this is good. This is going to help me. And then an hour later, I gotta stop this. This is killing me. You rarely will find at work that you say, I got to stop doing math, man. This is killing me, because it doesn't ever kill you. It's helpful in your job. If you find that the thinking becomes, this is killing me, I have to find a way to stop it. That's a clue. Now you're following metacognitive beliefs in a context that they don't belong in.
Definitely. Yeah. And for the thousandth time of saying, but have I missed something? If you said that for the thousandth time about the same subject, you know it's rumination.
Yeah, right. And this is killing me. I got to stop this. This is hurting me. But let me go back again just in case. Or I have a thinking problem that I think is a good thing to think. Then I discover it's not a good thing. So I have a problem about solving my thinking and what's my go-to to solve problems. Start, go back to A and start thinking some more. So when you get to the, this is killing me, I have to find a way to stop, that's when you know.
Yeah. And also use a metacognitive technique is that you could be like, which is, you know, metacognitive is thinking about your thinking or observing your thinking. And it could be, hold on, I've been on the subject for a while now. Is this reflection? Is this rumination?
Yeah.
That's, I often ask myself that sometimes. It's like, oh, well, it's clearly rumination. And you get pretty good at it and it gets pretty easy. You know, I found that anyway. And particularly with OCD, though, it'll use other things like guilt and stuff like that to keep, yeah, but is it? Because this actually has massive consequences. So maybe it's not rumination. It's like, it's definitely rumination.
Yeah.
If you're doing that. I've got a wonderful did it anyway.
Bring it.
To share. It was really lovely. Hi, wanted to tell you about a hashtag did it anyway. I have health anxiety, but got the chance to get a complete health checkup from my company. So I'm going to presume this is a someone with health anxiety who hates anything medical, not compulsively going there. They gave me an early appointment, so I only had to battle the 3 days from phone call to that. Made all the tests, blood work for several hours. Thought I would die after getting results, but I did it anyway. I have nothing but a low vitamin D level. Kind of proud I made it. Thank you. Well done. Yeah, medical tests can be scary if you have health anxiety. I love that. You know, make sure you get out in the sunshine, top up that vitamin D. You know, yeah, I love that. Well done.
Yeah, medical scary
tests
stuff.
Are scary. They still scare me. They scare the hell out of me.
Applause. Yeah. Studio audience chiming in.
Sit down, McConaughey. It's not about you.
No, very well done. Very well done. Because it's scary. Anytime you do something scary and you come out the other side, winning.
Yeah, so, love that.
Love it. I think we've done a pretty decent job with anxiety all day long, 35 minutes in. What do you think?
I could talk about anxiety all day long with you, Drew.
It seemed like the title did seem like a bit of a strange flex. Anxiety all day long, baby. Like, yeah, no, we don't mean it that way.
You think you get anxious in the morning is a problem?
Oh, well, let me tell you.
All day long.
Yeah, that's an interesting
twist. I can tolerate, I can willfully tolerate anxiety all day long if I have to.
Oh.
But the paradox is if I apply that attitude, I probably won't.
You don't have to. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. To bring it back to the beginning of the episode, what does it feel like? It feels like the simmering thing. And then when I lean into it, put my chin into it, I'm like, okay, come on, bring it, whatever it is. And I'm going to make my lunch while I feel this way. Then I don't have to deal with it much anymore. It tends to go away, interestingly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So. Same here.
Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Yeah. If you want to follow us on social media, I'm Anxiety Josh.
Yep. I am The Anxious Truth. You can find me in all the places.
Or just jump onto disorder.fm, say hello. Yeah. And once again, have a lovely morning, evening, wherever you are in the world, and we'll catch you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Hey, it's Drew. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Disordered. Josh and I both hope that you're finding it helpful in some way. For more information about Josh or me or the Disordered podcast, find us on the web at disordered.fm. That's disordered.fm. Pop on over and find links to our social media platforms. Join our mailing list so we can let you know when new podcast episodes are available. And we'll send you easy ways to ask us questions and share your wins so we can answer questions on the air and share your successes with the community. And if you're listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any platform that lets you rate or review, do us a favor and leave us a 5-star rating and maybe write a review if you're digging Disordered. It really helps us out and we appreciate that. Thanks again for coming by and we'll see you in the next episode.